You are listening to the audio-only portion of the KoopaCast. To watch the video version, please check out purenintendo.com/KoopaCast. The intro and outro music of our KoopaCast is brought to you by the artist Big Giant Circles, who has composed for projects such as Mass Effect 2, Super Street Fighter 2 HD Remix, and Borderlands 2. Our opening song is Houston, and our closing song is A Rose in the Field, both from the album Glory Days. To listen to more of Big Giant Circles' work, go to music.biggiantcircles.com to see his entire collection of video game remixes and soundtracks. You can also find his collection on iTunes. Again, that website is music.biggiantcircles.com.
First, we'll go through introductions, which should be fairly easy. And I did have a question for the night for everybody, so I guess we'll just start with that. Go ahead, Justin.
Oh, I'm Justin Sharp, and I do a lot of stuff on the site, editor-in-chief for the magazine, and I went to PAX this last week, so we'll have a little bit of recap on that. So.
And I'm Justin J. Money. I'm the assistant editor on the website, and I also do some writing for the magazine. The question I had for tonight was, have you purchased any games recently, past, like, week? And if not, what have you been playing recently? And between now and the end of the year, what do you look forward to purchasing the most?
Ooh. I did actually buy some games recently. I bought Splinter Cell Blacklist on the Wii U, and I've got Rayman Legends, and then I have a surprise that everybody's probably not going to like me for.
Nice.
But I got Wonderful 101, and I'll explain a little bit how I got it, but at PAX, they were doing a special thing where they had a Nintendo World store there. And they were selling 101 copies per day during PAX. So I couldn't resist. Had to pick it up. So.
And I hear Ben got lucky and got a signed copy.
Yeah, Ben got the signed copy. If you're the first 25 in line, you got a signed copy from Kamiya. But I didn't get a signed copy. But.
Oh. And I picked up Rayman Legends also.
Nice.
And I also pre-ordered the collector's edition of Wind Waker.
Ooh, yeah.
And I actually just read on Twitter that the collector's edition is now sold out, so I'm glad I actually went out and pre-ordered it.
Oh, no. I didn't even have a chance to pre-order it yet. Is that the one at GameStop with the Ganondorf figure?
Yep. I was kind of going in between Pokemon or the Wind Waker Collector's Edition, and I was like, oh, I'll just go with the Collector's Edition.
Good choice.
Yeah. All right,
or
so...
both. Or both.
Yeah. We got a few things to talk about, and I guess we'll start off with the 2DS that was announced. It was like this last week, right?
Yep. Yeah, basically a week ago.
So what do you think about the 2DS?
Well, I actually got some hands-on time with it at PAX.
How about that?
And so that was cool. They didn't have it for everybody, but the media that was there, they actually had like a 2DS, and it's pretty slick. The design of it's a little better than I thought it would be, just going off appearances. But one thing I really did like is on the shoulder buttons, they're actually contoured, so they actually kind of have like a curve like this. So it kind of feels like the GameCube L and R buttons a little bit. So you feel like when you're holding the system that it kind of fits a little bit better. It is interesting to hold, not having the clamshell design. But I think having the nice tapered edge where it gets bigger at the top actually works for how your fingers go around it. I did have a sleep switch on it. It also has both of the cameras, or actually all three of the cameras, the inner camera and the two outer ones, for doing 3D pictures. And they said that was just so that you can get full compatibility for all the 3DS games.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought the design of it was pretty slick. And yeah, I think it'll be interesting. We talked to him about kind of what the market is, and the Nintendo reps didn't really say, oh, we made it just for 7 and under, because obviously they want anyone to buy it. Their marketing speak was, we're all about options, so we wanted to give people more options. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's true. More options is good, and it's cheaper. And I was like, and it makes like perfect business sense, because now you have a cheaper model that's also cheaper to make, probably a lot cheaper to make than the 3DS and XL. And you put it in like the $130 price point. Now you don't even have to lower the price of the 3DS and the 3DS XL.
Right.
So essentially, you've done a price drop without actually dropping the price of anything.
Right, exactly.
So it's kind of interesting. I mean, it's a very businessy move, but they're like, oh, but it benefits everybody. More options, more options. But some people would say, oh, I'd rather have a 3DS price drop to 130, XL to 169. But it's pretty slick for what it is.
Well, a lot of people were saying online, I'll just say online, that some of the buttons seemed out of place just by looking at the photos that were online. Did it feel that way?
It actually felt pretty good. It kind of looks that way in the pictures. It looks like it would be uncomfortable to use, but I thought the circle pad was pretty naturally placed, and the buttons felt pretty good. I did feel like the bottom of it, how it tapered, like I felt like I was kind of holding it like this, where my thumbs were kind of like really up high. So it wasn't like, normally when you hold it, you're kind of clasping it and you're kind of holding it kind of like pinched. I felt like I was holding it more away from me, if that makes sense. Like my fingers were like, I don't know. It's hard to describe.
One,
But I felt like it was definitely smaller, but I'm used to the XL now, so.
yeah, that's true. Well, and initially they did kind of say that they were marketing it toward children, and it just looks kind of like it'd be a little too stretched out for like a small child to use.
I think it would work well for smaller hands for kids to use, because it is fairly small. It's roughly the same width as the original 3DS, maybe a little thinner, as far as this way goes. Yeah, it seemed like it was pretty easy to use.
Did you happen to see the fake Nintendo 1DS site that went up?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Seemed like a lot of people thought that that would be a great option.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of funny. It looks like they just copied the code and rehosted it and photoshopped an image or something. But
Did actually pretty good job on the site.
yeah. 1DS is an interesting concept. It really is going to be interesting when Nintendo does eventually come out with their next system. Because they've always been backwards compatible with the previous system, right? So now you have, the 2DS and 3DS, so potentially the next system, HDS or whatever it's called, would be backwards compatible with only the 3DS, but you still have the dependency on the two screens. So I wonder if Nintendo will go completely new, like new HD handheld only has one screen. I kind of feel like they're kind of stuck with the two screens now. But
It'll definitely be interesting to see where they go next.
yeah.
Because they really did kind of introduce the whole 3D thing too. So do they stick with that, or do they try and go like 3D and HD, or how they're going to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. And now like the Wii U is kind of like a dual screen console, if that's a term. So it seems like they're kind of on par there. So it seems like they're kind of going for the dual screen approach further on, but No, be interesting.
And especially with their combining like I guess the console and handheld sectors of Nintendo, if they plan on kind of going that direction and kind of merging the two almost, or would be interesting.
Yeah, then potentially then what they could do is have DS games playable on the next Wii U system or whatever, and then the controller would have the touch screen, so you'd have the touch screen part of DS games or 3DS games at that point, and then the top version would be up on the TV screen. So they could handle the backwards compatibility through that route, the virtual console or something. It'd be very interesting.
It would. I'll wait and see.
Some crazy ideas we're having here. Wonder if Nintendo has listened. They're like, maybe.
So I guess we'll go on to the Pokemon Direct from this morning, which kind of took everybody by surprise when they announced it.
Yeah, well, I didn't hear about it. I was flying back yesterday, but did they just announce it yesterday? Or was
To
it a
be
couple days
completely
ago?
honest, I don't remember when they announced it. It might have been yesterday or the day before, but everybody was kind of like, "Oh, okay."
But it had some pretty cool stuff in it. The Pokemon Bank is an interesting idea.
It seemed like people were initially concerned that it was a subscription service, like an annual fee. But I think, from what I saw on Twitter, I think it's $5 a year, which isn't too bad. I mean, they obviously could have posted it at whatever price they wanted to, but $5 a year really isn't bad, and it sounds like a really neat idea.
Yeah, that is really cheap, and I'm sure, it's just to pay for whatever server costs they have, I guess, but it seems like a slick service. It's basically a way for them, and I was kind of wondering how they were gonna do, like, hey, I've got old Pokemon, I want to transfer it to, the new game. So I guess it solves that part. I still hope there's gonna be some sort of a system link or something where I could put in my DS copy of Black and White or Black 2 and White 2 and, get the Pokemon at X and Y. But it sounded like you had to use the Pokemon Bank fee, or no, it was a different feature. It was like a
It was called Poke Transporter.
Poke Transporter. So I guess I could just do that, and then you don't have to use the cost there.
They did say that was a part of Pokemon Bank, so I don't know if you have to pay for Pokemon Bank. I
Yeah,
know
that's what I thought.
Japan has like a free trial of the Pokemon Bank until like January 31st, so I don't know if they're going to do the same thing for the US and Europe or.
Because that would at least get you to transfer your Pokemon over from an old system and then during the trial period.
And then if you wanted to continue the Pokemon Bank, like you really enjoyed it, then you could start the payments or whatever.
Yeah, because my concern would be that they're trying to, charge for all this stuff after you bought the game. So it's like, oh, in order to, get all the Pokemon you spent hours and hours and hours, training, now you have to pay more money to even move it across. Whereas before you just bought the game and, plugged in your old cartridge and transferred it. But so yeah, hopefully that's a free thing.
And what I found interesting is that they made it so large, like 3,000 Pokemon. That's a lot of Pokemon. Well, I'm wondering if they're thinking we're going to keep this service long term. So say maybe like three Pokemon games into the future, you still have Pokemon in your Pokemon bank from X and Y.
Yeah, I think so. It seems like they're planning for the future expansion of the Pokemon. And it almost sounded like one of the guys was saying, oh, I can't wait to see what all of the Pokemon would look like in Mega Evolved forms. If you caught that. So I was like, interesting. So potentially, and I was kind of hoping, and I hope this isn't the case, but I was kind of worried that these Mega Evolutions would actually be a part of the new 100 Pokemon or whatever that they're adding X and Y.
and
that it would be like a majority of Mega Evolutions, and then there'd be some new ones, obviously, but hopefully it's 100 new ones, since the Mega Evolutions don't stay that way. It's just a bat in battle thing. So hopefully the 100 new Pokemon or whatever are actual catchable, trainable Pokemon, and not just 50 of a Mega Evolution or whatever. So maybe they'll just have like a separate category going forward where there'll be 750 Pokemon, and then you've got the Mega Evolutions for this, this, and this, and eventually they'll have over 1,500 or something. I don't know, once they added Mega Evolutions. Oh, it's gonna be crazy. Well, I guess it wouldn't be exactly double, but.
I was really excited to hear that they were bringing back Squirtle, Charmander, and Bulbasaur.
Yeah, I think that's huge, and it sounded like you get one of the new starters from like a friend or something, I guess at the beginning. You can choose your normal type that you want, grass, water, or fire, but then later on from Professor Sycamore you get one of the original ones. So it's kind of cool. You end up getting two starters, and you can kind of mix and match at that point. So if you got a started off with a fire X and Y starter, and then you're like, oh, I really like Bulbasaur or Squirtle, then you can get them, and that way you've got two of the main types covered in the game. Because I remember it always kind of stunk where you had to get like both copies of the games or trade with a friend who got to the Pokemon Center where like the third one where you could actually transfer to another cartridge. Because you actually had to play through like a few hours before you even got the wireless transfer or the link cable transfer ability. So it's like to wait for that just to get all three of the starters, that took a lot of time to do, if you wanted to get all of the new starters for generation. So this is a cool way to get a couple different starters just built into the game. So I think it's a cool idea.
The problem I have is I could see myself choosing Fennekin and Charmander because I like both of those. So,
Both the fire types, yeah.
yeah.
That's true. That's good. You can have a couple fire types.
And I guess the last piece of big news coming out of the Pokemon Direct were the bundles, the special edition
Oh
bundles.
yeah. I think that's huge because I think that's one big complaint with people against Nintendo of America. They're like, oh, they never have any special editions. Japan gets all the special edition systems. So that's really cool that they're coming out with those here.
Yeah, definitely. And from what I heard, I think that the bundle, like, I guess initially gets sold without the game bundled in.
Interesting.
I thought I saw it going around somewhere. Like,
Weird.
I think they're coming out with the systems maybe prior to release.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because it is coming out like September 27th. Yeah.
27th.
Yeah, so that's like 3 weeks before, or 2 weeks before, I guess.
So maybe they'll sell them with a code, maybe, and then on the release date for the actual game, you can just enter in the code and download the game.
Yeah, I hope that's how they do it anyway. Because I imagine the ones that are sold after October 12 would have the digital version. I doubt they would bundle the physical copy with, since the $200. So, that's strange. Oh,
So,
and then what about the Wii U price drop last week and the all
oh, yeah.
that?
Yeah, I almost forgot about that price drop.
They had a lot of stuff in that press release last week. The 2DS was obviously the big item. People were like, "What?"
Yeah, that I think kind of surprised everybody. Didn't expect that one.
But the Wii U price drop is big. What do you think about it?
I don't know that they necessarily really needed to go there right now. I think honestly that they're kind of just making preparation for the holiday. Maybe if they drop the price by a little bit and may make it a little more appealing, especially going up against Xbox One and PS4, which are sure to release this holiday. And they're just trying, I think, to remain competitive. And I had another thought, but I lost
No, okay.
it.
Yeah, I think they confirmed, I guess, the PS4 and Xbox One are coming out like November 15th, I guess, for PS4, November 22 for Xbox One. They just confirmed that today. At least the
Oh,
Xbox
okay.
One one. Because it was like the same day that the Xbox 360 announced and something like that. But so yeah, those systems will definitely be out. And I kind of think, yeah, I agree with you. They didn't really need to do it. I like, people are always like, oh, they need to drop that to like, oh, the Wii U's so overpriced, and they need to drop that to like $150 because the graphics are terrible, blah, 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 blah. It's such silly logic, but because there's a lot of cool technology in the controller, in the streaming technology, in the HD graphics. I mean, it can handle full 1080p games. There are very few, if any, PS3 and 360 games that can actually handle 1080p and full, 60 frames per second or whatever. Rayman Legends on the Wii U is running at 1080p. So I think people's view on the Wii U price as being exorbitant or way too high, I think, is a little silly. But yeah, the fact that they drop it $50, I think that's a good sweet spot. You get under the $299 at that point, so that you're at sub 300, which is a lot more appealing than $349. Especially to parents. I mean, parents, grandparents are going to be buying, presents this holiday, are now going to see $399 for PS4. Doesn't come with a game. Doesn't come with, any extra, bells and whistles. And then you've got the Xbox One at $499, no game. I guess they do have like some sort of a FIFA bundle or a Forza 5 bundle, maybe in the UK. Maybe it's coming to the US. I don't know. But I think the value proposition is a lot better with Nintendo at that $299 mark, and I think it doesn't scream quite the emergency price drop as the 3DS price drop did. Because when the 3DS dropped price, wasn't it like by like $80, $70, $80, something like that?
It was a pretty good chunk.
Yeah,
It
it went from like 250 to like 170, I think. Something. It was a pretty big drop. And I think that's why Nintendo did the whole ambassador program and all that. I think with $50, I don't think you really need to do the ambassador program. It was a full year after, whereas the 3DS price drop was like 5 months after or something like that. So I think it's a good move, and that Wind Waker HD bundle is just. That's just a really smart idea. I was talking to someone on the plane yesterday, and he hadn't heard about that. He hadn't heard about the price drop, and he doesn't have a Wii U. He's got a 3DS, but he's like, "Oh, they dropped the price." And I was like, "Yeah, it's $299 for the regular deluxe, and then they also announced the Wind Waker HD version, which comes with digital copy of Hyrule Historia." He had just bought the physical copy, and then it comes with the game, and then it comes with, the extra cool controller, the gamepad. And so he was like, "Oh, I'm definitely getting it." And it was funny because before, when I talked to him, he was gonna wait till like Mario Kart 8 or Smash Brothers or even the next Zelda Wii U game, the next mainline Zelda game. But once he heard about Wind Waker HD bundle and all that, he was like, "Oh yeah, $299, yeah, I'm sold."
Wow.
So I think that's gonna be a lot of people, and I think there's a lot of good quality games line up for the holiday with Mario 3D World and all that. So I don't know. I think it's wasn't like super necessary, but I think it'll definitely help.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and there's a lot of chatter on the internet about a Wii U ambassador program and the Wind Waker bundle. People were like, "Oh, it's just a special looking controller. What's the big deal?" But one thing I didn't know about is I didn't know it came with a digital copy of Hyrule Historia, so that's kind of cool too.
Yeah, and it comes with a digital copy of Wind Waker, and
Right.
some people don't like the digital copy, but it's still, it's still a full game that comes on there. So,
Yeah, definitely.
and I've kind of been liking the digital copies a little bit better now, just because I can just launch it directly from the home screen. I don't have to switch discs or anything. And now I'm getting super lazy, where I'm already sitting on the couch. I've got my gamepad next to me, and I'm just like, turn on. Start this game, Whereas, if I've got the disc, I've got to get up, walk over to the, where I've got my games, like 4 feet away. I mean, I don't want to walk 4 feet.
I've kind of found myself doing the same thing with some of the, like for instance, like Cloudberry Kingdom. It's so easy, like, to play that, I have to walk across the room, or I could just play this.
Yep, I know. It's like, I've already got some downloadable games. I'll just play that. Yeah, so I think digital will, get a lot more accepted, I think, moving on in the Wii U's life. And already, I mean, the fact that Nintendo released New Super Luigi U like a full 2.5 months before the retail version, and now you've got Wind Waker HD, which comes out September 20, a full 2 weeks before the October 4th physical launch. So, anyway, I think it's a, I think digital will eventually take over, but.
Well, and I think a lot of people have been downloading those games early rather than waiting for the physical copies of the games. Because a lot of people will get online and say, like, oh, I just downloaded such and such. But then you
Yep.
still kind of find those people that are still going to wait for the physical copy. But it seems like a lot of people are downloading them early because they're available that much earlier.
Yeah, and yeah, you think about Pikmin 3, that came out like a day early if they did the download, and so I think there's going to be more and more incentives for that.
Yeah, definitely.
And then what about all the release dates that they announced in that press release? There was like a ton. Let me pull them all up here.
Was gonna say, I don't think I read through that press release, so I don't know about the release dates.
Yeah. They always hide that stuff in there. Oh yeah. One thing we didn't talk about with the 2DS, it comes out the same day as Pokemon X and Y. Coincidence? I think not.
No, definitely not.
I mean, that just makes like stupid sense. My goodness. Because you got all the, all these kids and, us that grew up with Pokemon Red and Blue, we're gonna go out and get it. The next generation of Pokemon fans are gonna get it. And like, oh, the 2DS is here? Cool, it's only 130. Get it for me, Mom and Dad.
I had to tell James today that I haven't played a Pokemon game since Red and Blue, so I think I might have to go get X or Y.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing with Tristan. Tristan hasn't played since the originals too. So, and I think that's another cool reason, putting in the original starters in there. I think they're really trying to appeal to, not just a new generation of Pokemon fans, but people who remember the good old days. Are like, oh, I can get Charmander and Bulbasaur
Yeah,
and
I
Squirtle. So.
played hours of Red and Blue, so.
Oh, so good. Yeah, I had Blue, played the heck out of that, and then I got Gold and Silver. Oh, those were so good. Gold and Silver are some of my favorites. But yeah, here are the release dates. So yeah, they did the Wind Waker HD release dates. Wii Party U comes out on October 25. Super Mario 3D World comes out November 22nd. So they have a firm date for that. Mario 3D World and Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze actually swapped places. If you guys remember, Mario 3D World was scheduled for December, and Donkey Kong was scheduled for November. Now they are swapped. So Mario 3D World is going to be $60, comes out November 22. Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze comes out December 6th, and it's only $50.
Really, I would have kind of expected the opposite.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see why that is. I mean, I think they're probably reusing a lot of the same engine that they developed for the Wii, and just made HD visuals, did some of the underwater stuff, some of the camera angles that they're doing. But maybe it was just easier to make for them, and that's why it's cheaper. I don't know.
It's
Wind
possible.
Waker HD is also 50, so.
It's possible because with 3D, it's 3D land, no, 3D World. 3D World, they kind of did the funny camera angle. So I could kind of see how that might have taken a little more time to kind of perfect.
Yeah, and they probably have like, a new engine with it and, new graphics and a lot of stuff, I guess. And I kind of think that with Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, they're trying to make their engine pretty scalable. And I honestly think that we'll see Tropical Freeze eventually come on the 3DS, just like the first game, Donkey Kong Country Returns.
Early next year, watch that Nintendo
Could be. It could be on your 3DS. Who knows? Or they could use it as a launch title port for the next Nintendo handheld. Who knows? Who knows? Wii Fit U, they still say holiday season. Mario and Sonic is holiday. But then Link Between Worlds, they announced for November 22nd. And Mario Party Island Tour on the 3DS, they announced for November 22nd. So there's three first-party Nintendo games coming out on November 22nd. Mario 3D World, the new Zelda on the 3DS, and Mario Party Island Tour.
That's one thing I do have to kind of say for on Nintendo's side, like that they've got like a huge lineup for this holiday.
Oh yeah, and that, yeah, they mentioned a bunch of third-party games in there too. I mean, there's a lot of good third-party games coming out, and that have already come out. It started kind of with Pikmin 3, Splinter Cell Blacklist, Rayman Legends. Now you got Wonderful 101 out. There's really just a ton of games coming out in the next few months.
Watch Dogs is in November.
Yeah, Watch Dogs, Assassin's Creed 4.
Yep.
Batman Arkham Origins for Wii U and 3DS. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff coming out.
Yes, all those people saying there aren't games to play on the Wii U. Watch out.
Yep, watch out. Yeah, oh, it's just gonna be good having all those games out and
Well, I know indies typically don't get a lot of attention, but there are quite a few indie titles that are supposed to be coming out this holiday too, so.
Oh yeah, and we saw a ton of those at PAX, ton of awesome indie games and
Like Gianna Sisters, I don't even know how to say it. That comes
Gaia
out
or whatever,
tomorrow.
sisters. And then what else do you have? You've got all sorts of other ones coming out.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Shovel Knight is scheduled for winter, they say,
Oh, okay.
but it may not be holiday. It could be like January, February, or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, lots of good stuff.
So speaking of PAX.
Oh yeah, PAX. Woo. Yeah. So, ooh, and I gotta show everybody this. We're gonna be selling these on the site soon, but we wore these around PAX and everybody loved them, so we're definitely gonna give everyone online a chance to get them. But we have P-Wing lapel pins, and let me go get it real quick.
All right. Well, while he's gone, I'll kind of explain the whole PAX thing. Pure Nintendo slash Pure Nintendo Magazine got a chance to go out to PAX Prime in Seattle last weekend, and we hung out with the guys that made Cloudbreak Kingdom, Pony Studios, and I guess they had a competition, and I'll let Justin take it from there.
Nice, yeah. So here are the P-Wing lapel pins.
Very nice.
So yeah, they look really slick when they're pinned on there. So we'll be selling these on the site soon, so you guys can look forward to that. Yeah, so PAX 2013 was incredibly awesome. Yeah, some people probably wonder how it compares to E3, and this was my first PAX. I've been to six E3s or so. And E3 is definitely awesome, but it's such a different crowd. At PAX, it's mostly gamers, mostly fans. There's very little media there, actually.
Wow.
At least, as far as, percentage comparison to, E3. Pretty much everybody's media or retail or, people in the business, developers, etc. But at PAX, it's pretty much like a really good mix of actual developers, indie devs, people who have made all these AAA games or demoing the games, And then you got all these gamers. And then, a few media here and there. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We did a contest with Pony Studios of Cloudberry Kingdom and gave away a free print subscription to the winner. And they gave away copies of the game as well. But man, our booth was just like packed the whole time. It was a lot of fun. It was great meeting and hanging out with them. And what else do we do? Nintendo was there in a big way. They had all their games basically from E3, and then some, a lot of the new eShop titles. They had Shovel Knight there. We played that. We played Cube. We played, I think it's called World of the Fletchlings or something like
Keflings.
that. Keflings, there you go. World of Keflings, and then there's one other game trying to. Oh, Armillo.
Right.
And so they were actually showing those four games at Nintendo's booth directly, and then they had the Indie Mega Booth, which was showcasing a lot of other ones. I got to play Tengami on the Wii U, and that they were showing it for the first time there. Tesla Grad was actually right next to us. They were just on the other side of the curtain
Oh, that's cool.
from us at the show, so it was fun to meet those guys. They're from Norway. They're a lot of fun. But yeah, there's just a ton of people. They're just really excited about playing the games. They're, dressed up. There's a ton of cosplayers. But anyways, it was a lot of fun. I'm trying to think what else there is. Yeah. Oh, we went to the Wonderful 101 panel. And that was a lot of fun to hang out in. And then we got that little exclusive peek at the end that we tweeted out about the Bayonetta characters hidden in Wonderful 101. So
Right.
that was some cool little stuff there. But do you have any questions about what we did?
Well, I guess my first and probably most obvious question is going to be outside of playing games, because that's obviously the most popular part of it. What was your favorite part of PAX?
Yeah, playing games is good. I don't know, just like meeting the fans, I guess. I mean, there were people that we met that had already subscribed to the magazine that came
Oh,
by. And several more that subscribed there on the spot. And I don't know. So that was just a lot of fun. I think probably the most fun was meeting the indie developers and talking to them.
right.
The last day of the show, we actually went around and really got to talk to everybody, all the indie devs, introduce ourselves and say, hey, when you're ready for your Wii U version to come out, let us know. We'll get you the magazine. We'll, whatever info you guys have about the game, we'll get it out there. And so it's really cool just establishing those relationships with them. And a lot of the indie devs are really cool, really passionate about their games. Trying to think what else. Oh yeah, we got to meet a lot of cool people. We got to meet the Completionist and Peanut Butter Gamer and Game Grumps, several big YouTube celebrities, and I'm sure they would, don't care to be called celebrities, but they're really down to earth guys and gals. And we got to meet Amanda Flagg, who makes a lot of shirts and cool video game shirts, and so she was a lot of fun to talk to. Showed them the magazine stuff, so it was just real cool. It was just completely relaxed. I think our whole time there, just chill, go to appointments, and just like, oh yeah, play the games, whatever. Everyone is just so relaxed there. Where at E3, I think it's just a little more stiff.
Definitely.
People are trying to impress more, I guess. I don't know.
Well, at E3, you kind of see everybody kind of seems like more in a rush, like going here and going there, and I'm late, or and so I could see how PAX could probably, without all the media trying to get do their job, people are there just to kind of enjoy themselves.
Yeah, and there's not a whole lot of new info that comes out at PAX. You know, at E3 they've got all the announcements and then, you know, the showcase and stuff. So that changes it up. But yeah, PAX, it was just so chill and, you know, it was a lot of fun.
What was your, I guess, most favorite one or two games to play at PAX?
Oh, I would say, they did have some new Sonic Lost World levels
Oh, that's cool.
at PAX that were different than the ones that they had at E3. Oh, probably one of my favorites is Pokemon X and Y.
Oh,
They
you're talking
did have
about
those playable for the first time, so that was fun. They kind of like just have you in this little demo area where you can run around, you can catch Pokemon, you can battle Pokemon. It kind of gives you the lay of the land, and it gives you like a party of Pokemon that you can switch through and, you know, just see the different 3D models of them. And then at the end, you meet Professor Sycamore, and he demonstrates a mega evolution for you. So
Oh, that's
that was
kind of
pretty
neat.
cool. Yeah, so they it was just kind of like just showing off all the main new features for it, I think. So that was definitely a lot of fun. We played Arkham Origins. They didn't have the Wii U version playable, but they did have Blackgate playable on the 3DS. That was really cool. Shantae and the Pirate's Curse was a lot of fun. This was the first time it was playable, first time it's actually been seen in motion since it was announced last year. So that was a lot of fun. I'm trying to think what else. But I would probably say like Shantae was a lot of fun to play, and X and Y was a lot of fun to play. I would say those were the best games just because I hadn't seen those before, and those were the best of the new games I played.
Right.
You know, since that we had seen Donkey Kong and Mario 3D World and all that stuff before.
Are there any particular experiences that kind of stuck out, like as far as, I guess, when you're playing games and stuff?
Well,
Interesting. Is it
I
the
liked
Wii
the
U?
exploration in Pirate's Curse.
Oh, okay.
And for people that don't know, in this one, Shantae isn't gonna have a lot of her animal transformation abilities. She's kind of lost those, and she's actually going through the game, and she'll collect different weapons that are actually Risky's weapons. So she'll collect like, you know, a pirate pistol or so she kind of gets some of the other weapons that she's not really used to, or fans aren't used to seeing, I guess, Shantae using. But the 3D was a lot of fun on it. They're doing some cool stuff, and probably the best game I could relate it to as far as the quality of the 8-bit animations. It actually reminded me a lot of Metal Slug back in the day. You know, just real detailed, you know, really fast moving, you know, pixel art and animation. So it was a lot of fun. And then Pokemon, just seeing it and getting able to play it was pretty cool. Oh, we did get to see a guided demo of Watch Dogs.
Oh, okay.
And we strictly could not film or you know, do anything like that. We couldn't film it, or they were like, "We will kick you out, and we will, you know, you will not be able to see the demo." But it was a what?
I'm kind of curious if it's the same one that they showed off at E3.
Oh, did you see the demo at E3?
Yes, I did.
Were they showing off the tablet gameplay?
No.
Okay, so this may have been a new one, but it was very cool. And I guess I can tell you guys. I mean,
You're not
there's no
filming anything.
embargo or anything. We didn't sign any NDA when we walked in. I mean, come on, what is this? E3? Come on, this is but yeah, we went into this room, and one person was playing on with. They were playing with a PS4 controller, but it was connected to a PC, probably the PS4 dev kit. As many of you probably know, there aren't actual PS4s playable out there. It's just dev kits, which makes sense. That's just kind of what people and developers have now. So this guy was playing on the PS4 dev kit, and he was playing the character on the screen, and then this girl was demoing on a tablet. I don't know which tablet it was. I don't know if it's iPad or Android, but I imagine she said it was supposed to be on all mobile devices, phones, tablets, stuff like that. But it's a companion app that you can download, and you can actually play with your friends and issue challenges to them from the app. So, like, it showed kind of the city grid, but when she logged in, she issued a challenge to her friend, and the challenge popped up on his screen. You know, he's just kind of cruising around in the open world, and it's like, so-and-so challenged you to a race or something. So he accepts, and then she has access to controlling his city at that point. So the city is completely, I mean, you can control every aspect of it. You can adjust traffic lights. You can, you know, pop up those little security barriers that come out from the street, the concrete. The cool thing that I had never seen before was you can actually detonate steam that's like steam or water or whatever that's running underneath the roadways.
Right.
So this at this one point, he's doing like kind of a race challenge where he has to go through these different checkpoints throughout the city, and she's doing everything to stop him. So she can actually control a helicopter. She can move it around on the tablet. And wherever he is driving recklessly, if he's hitting other cars or if he's running red lights or stuff like that, it'll show him on her screen. So it's not like she can just see him wherever he goes. He has to, you know, really drive carefully or whatever to avoid being spotted by her.
Huh.
Anyways, she detonated this steam pipe. And it, you know, detonated underneath him, and he, you know, the car kind of flips or whatever, and it really busts it up. He has to get out of the car, jumps in another car. There's also a wanted level. So if everyone's played Need for Speed Most Wanted or any Hot Pursuit games, it's kind of like a 5-level, you know, wanted meter. And so that goes up, more cops will come after you, etc. But tons of different stuff to control in the game. So anyways, it was a cool little demo, and she eventually like got him, and he, you know, he wasn't able to finish the challenge, but the stuff they showed off of the city was very cool, very dynamic. The way they described it, they did show a video at the beginning where, the creative director was like, if you cause an accident and there are innocent civilians caught in that accident, and people are hurt or whatever, if you save them, it could potentially help you later on in the game. Hmm. Those people you saved may be connected to the storyline somehow. Basically, the way he said was, everybody is connected and everything is connected. So the whole city is connected on this grid or whatever. It's basically an operating system for the whole city infrastructure. So I'm probably telling you too much about it, but anyways, spoiler. but they didn't mention much about the storyline, but they did mention that your decisions in the game, your choices in the game, will affect, you know, how things go. Like let's say in order to get money, you actually have to hack people's mobile devices or something like that, and go to an ATM, stuff like that. If you do steal from the wrong person, though, that could potentially come back and bite you. It could be like, you know, you stole from a drug lord or something, you know.
Nice.
So, you know, he's like, it may not necessarily be in your best interest to just hack everybody and steal everybody's money, you know.
Right.
So he kind of alluded to the fact that it's not like GTA, go anywhere and do whatever you want. He's like, you know, you got to think about what you're doing, and it can affect, you know, what happens in the game.
Very interesting.
But yeah, that was pretty cool.
Did they show off any of the hacking gameplay where you hack other players?
No, not really. I mean, they showed that trailer today, and that was really more than what they showed off in that demo, even.
Yeah, they showed that off at E3, so we got a little bit of a taste of the hacking stuff then.
So hacking stuff, and with, you know, all that level of capability with the tablets, and I'm kind of wondering if the Wii U version will actually use the Wii U gamepad in that way. I'm still hoping it has tablet connectivity where just any tablet could join a Wii U version of the game or whatever.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same. I'd hate for that piece of the game to be
Just to
left
be
out.
restricted to the gamepad or whatever.
Right.
They didn't confirm that obviously, but I imagine the Wii U version will still have the tablet stuff, but that was really cool. Oh, probably one of the coolest things at PAX. Oh my goodness, it was so cool. Next to where they had the 3DS kiosks or demo stations for Pokemon X and Y, all the other 3DS games, they had what they called a beanbag lounge. Oh my goodness, I don't know who thought of this idea, but it's amazing. Because all day you're walking, right? You're walking or you're standing. And your feet hurt, your back hurts. So there's this area with just beanbags. I mean, it's a good, I don't know, that's a good like 100 feet by 50 feet of beanbags. And you can just lounge in there. They were doing like 3DS competitions, like Mario Kart 7, Animal Crossing, and people were just like street passing the whole time. I got all of my puzzle pieces. I got like 400 puzzle pieces in like 2 days.
Whoa.
And you're just like hanging out in the on these sleeping or bean bags. It may have well has been a sleeping bag. I fell asleep at one point, but man, they were just awesome.
That's awesome.
So, bless those PAX people. Yeah, that was PAX. It was pretty sweet.
Very cool. And we're going to Salt Lake Comic Con.
Yes.
Yes. We'll be at Salt Lake Comic Con, so anybody in the Utah area or elsewhere going to that event, stop by and see us.
Yeah, actually, starting tomorrow afternoon, it should be open and. Come by. We're also doing a Smash Brothers tournament with Utah 3DS Street Pass. So you guys can win some cool stuff. Obviously, subscriptions to the magazine, both print and digital, and some other cool stuff that Utah 3DS Street Pass has. So definitely, if you are going to Salt Lake Comic Con, definitely check us out. Go by our booth and. You'll actually we did sell some of those lapel pins at PAX, and we will have more of those at Salt Lake Comic Con to sell as well. So if you guys are there, you'll be some of the first to get yourself a Keyring lapel pin.
I think we're also going to have shirts there as well.
We'll have shirts and some hoodies and stuff like that. So definitely stop by the booth, and we'll obviously have a place where you can subscribe to the magazine. So lots of cool stuff for Comic Con goers there.
Let's see if we have any reader questions. I don't see any on here. So no reader questions, but that's weird.
Nice. Yeah, we probably encompassed a lot. They're like, yep, you got it. Answer my question. PAX is awesome.
Now, is PAX Prime or PAX East bigger? I think PAX East is bigger, right?
Well, I'm not sure, actually. I haven't heard official numbers from PAX Prime yet, but people were saying it was about 100,000. Which is quite a bit. I'm not sure what PAX East had, but this was the 10th anniversary of PAX Prime, so I would think it's probably the biggest one yet they've had.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll be able to attend more of these cons and events next year. Kind of been limited to what we can do here and there. I know people were kind of asking if we were going to go to Gamescom and stuff, but without being overseas, that kind of makes it even more difficult for us in the US to attend.
Yeah. Someday. I'd like to go to Gamescom. They said they had like 380,000 people or something crazy.
Yeah, it was something like astronomical.
Of course, you got also, factor in it's completely free. People can just go
Oh, really? I didn't know.
in. That's what I heard anyway, that, it's just open to the public and they can come to free for free. Whereas PAX, they, it's open to the public, but they have to pay for passes and stuff. So, anyway. I guess that's about it.
Yeah, I think so. Well, we appreciate everybody who came to watch our September 4th KoopaCast,
The
and
Justin Show.
the double Justin show. So we'll catch you all in another couple weeks for our next KoopaCast.
right.
All right.
See you guys. Have a good one. Play more games.
Always play more games.
Yes.